Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello.
Each week we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 83 is once again being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So, once again, we are coming to you live on Saturday to be broadcast on Monday from beautiful Lawrenceville, Georgia.
So, I thought you were going to go somewhere with like the Saturday day, kind of like Saturday Night Live.
No, it's kind of a pre-football Saturday, though. Got some big games, not sure what's going to happen. Just heard not too long ago that whoever they are, have officially announced that Joe Biden won the election, which is not a shocker at all. But, yeah, it's kind of a big day, I guess.
I guess so. So November 7th will go down in history forever. But I think there's a long road still ahead.
Oh, yeah. The election day and thereafter have been very, very stressful. And I think it's going to be in the news for the next several months. I do not expect Donald Trump to go down not swinging or crying or throwing a fit. Anyway, enough about politics.
On to the animal industry.
So a lot of stories, I think, to talk about this week. I wanted to make that one of the focuses that we had. But also, I did want to mention that I tuned in to the Genius Vets all-day
event
webinar yesterday, and I was kind of popping in and out because I had cases and some, I guess, other appointments and things going on. But it was pretty interesting. They had pre-recorded many of the interviews, and then David Hall was pretty much live for most of the event, kind of moderating back and forth. So I thought they did a really good job, and it was very informative.
Cool.
So let's jump into some news stories.
Alrighty. Where do you want to start?
Let's start at the beginning.
All right. So Denmark, picked out of the headlines from the AVMA, the Animal Health Smart Brief, which, by the way, did you know that Smart Brief is kind of like they pull news stories together for multiple industries, not just the veterinary industry. Did you know that?
No.
So like if you go to smartbrief.com, you can see essentially collections of
human medical, dental.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought it was interesting. So I recently, I know you're a member of the AVMA, right? As a veterinarian.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so you kind of get these smart briefs kind of in your inbox all the time. And I'm not a paid member of the AVMA, and so I never really get these smart briefs, so I recently signed up for them.
I didn't know you didn't get these.
Mm-mm, I don't get these. I do now, but historically I didn't. I would get things like AHA, Newsstat, and stuff like that we would pull some stories from, but I've never gotten the smart brief. So anyways, long story short, Smart Brief is actually a paid customer or a paid company that AVMA uses to kind of pull all these stories together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I thought that was very interesting. So this first story that you have listed here from the AVMA Smart Brief was mink and mink farms and COVID-19.
Yeah, so we've talked multiple times in the past about mink being tested positive for COVID.
We've talked about it in like Wisconsin, right? Didn't we say that there were mink farms here in the United States in Wisconsin?
Yes, I think the Northeast is, which Wisconsin does not qualify for that, but I think
that's
maybe
Midwest.
Upper Midwest to the Northeast is where most of the mink farms are. And so I just thought this was interesting because there were 12 people who had contracted SARS-CoV-2 from the mink is what they think over in Denmark. And so they confirmed that 207 out of about 1,100 mink farms had COVID-positive mink.
So here we go again, right? I'm going to be the devil's advocate. So 207 out of 1,100 mink farms. Help me out with my math here, but that's 20%?
I mean, it's roughly, we could say roughly that, yeah.
That's not a huge number.
Yeah.
So to depopulate majority of the mink farms, or as it says here, All mink farms in the country should be depopulated to prevent transmission of the strain to people. To go ahead and depopulate 1,100 mink farms, over 200 of them having positive mink, I feel like that's a bit...
17-18%.
Rough.
Now, the article just reads that the Prime Minister, Fredrickson, said that all mink farms should be depopulated. I'm not sure if he or she is mandating that or what.
Yeah, I don't know. So do you remember that when this whole COVID thing started, we were actually reporting on the news from China before I had actually even realized that it was a threat to America?
Right.
Do you remember we reported like in January earlier of this year where the Chinese were demanding that people would basically bring all of their domestic pets in to be essentially slaughtered or euthanized?
Because of the same reason, because some were suspected or did test positive.
Yep. So I feel like it's interesting. I don't know. It depends on, I guess, what they're using these mink for. I'm not very familiar
with mink farming. I'll be honest. I don't want to be associated with it. I really care nothing about it. But
so I guess if they're going to depopulate them and they're going to put their bodies, I guess, to use or the same uses that they would originally be used for, I guess. I understand, but I don't know. I think it's such a low percentage to completely depopulate all of them. And that's just
this is news, right? This is news, fake or not, we don't know. It's just what's being reported.
I don't know. It's just one of those things. And I guess I also, being an animal advocate, I don't necessarily look at it as a human health risk, but I guess I should, right? Like, if 12 people were infected, if 12 people were infected, that's probably 12 too many. So anyways.
Okay. So moving on, you know, it seems like since we started the podcast, you know, we're talking about all these diseases, all these zoonotic diseases, these mutations and whatnot. And then lo and behold, COVID-19 happens and just completely takes over our life, I feel like.
In all aspects. I mean, for the
last 7 or 8 months. And so, you know, but yet every time we, not every time, but at least once a month when we pull these stories, we hear about very similar infections, but yet different. And so in the same reporting from Smart Brief, they report a rare human case of H1N2 flu reported in Canada. And evidently,
so H1N2 is swine flu?
Swine flu, and it's a... I don't know. They say this rare...
So, correct me if I'm wrong, but like in May, right after all this COVID stuff kind of happened, all the countries were shut down, and then China started opening back up, and then instantly they were talking about how China was infected with this African swine flu. So, is this the same strain?
I think it's different. Okay. I think it's different. You know, only the story reports only 27 human cases of infection with the influenza A variant have been reported since 2005 and have all been linked back to contact with pigs. But this is very complicated stuff.
It is very complicated.
I have quite a bit of knowledge, virology, immunology, everything that we're talking about. But even this article, you know, we're talking about a H1N2 swine flu variant that a person was diagnosed with, and they say only 27 people have been infected with influenza A. I don't understand influenza A versus H1N2. It's very confusing.
It is confusing, but again, it's kind of what I go back to every time. Like, what makes it newsworthy?
The wow factor.
Again, if only 27 people in the entire world. It sucks if you're one of those 27 or if you know one of those 27. But to strike the fear in everybody else in the world, I feel like that's a bit extravagant.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right, moving on. Lions, genetic diversity declining, but hope remains.
I don't really know what that means. So,
at Texas A&M...
They're hiring for a technician, by the way. Did you know that?
Texas A&M is?
Yeah, I thought about applying.
Okay, yeah.
Just kidding.
Please don't.
Definitely don't want to live in Texas.
So they did a study and did some DNA analysis, and it showed that the lion populations are far more fragmented now than they were a century ago in the same geographical regions. And it's basically because of the restrictions and the protections of the species versus just them having free roam. And that completely makes sense.
So it's interesting that the authors here suggest that if more male lions are given the liberties to roam freely, that this could very well go away.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, but survival of the fittest, fight or flight, all these things.
Yes and no. It's not really survival of the fittest when humans are involved. I really don't think
that's
that
what
way.
I'm saying. They're it's being overly protected, and so natural nurture. Selection is not taking place.
Right.
And so we are trying to do good, and maybe in some aspects we are, but in others we're putting them in harm's way because they're not, I don't know, surviving, acting as they normally would in the wild. That sure. would be my point.
So once again, the human race is at fault.
Sure.
I'm just kidding. Are we like negative Nancy's on this show today or what?
Today I think we are. I'm kind of, I don't know. I've been under the weather all week, so we'll get through it though. Chicken farm in Japan is culling 330,000 birds because after a supposed government inspection,
they have the bird flu.
They have avian influenza.
So we don't know what strain that is as far as like the H and N factors, but. Gosh.
So, you know, I'll pause here. Big picture, the more quickly and readily we can disseminate all this information, the more newsworthy it is and the more we can get upset about it. But you got to really dig into some of these stories because, again, I don't even fully understand the meaning of some of them. It's very newsworthy, very eye-opening, but I don't know the full effect. I do know... My two most interesting stories.
Okay.
One is the fact that Nestle.
Yes. Purina.
I'm assuming Nestle of Nestle Purina. Purina fame is launching a new dog food in Switzerland that has a novel protein source.
Do you remember we talked about this months ago?
Yeah, but I didn't remember it being black soldier fly larvae.
So it wasn't. We just talked about it as like a
insects,
quote unquote. So what's actually very interesting about the story that you pulled here is that I read a story on NPR that says that this Nestle Purina black fly larvae novel protein diet, along with other non-meat protein diets will be available online to U.S. citizens January.
That's crazy. So there's a trend to get away from, I guess, livestock sources of protein.
So let's talk about that because I am a little bit, I guess, I'll use that word again, ignorant when it comes to why meat production is such a bad thing for the environment. Do you know what the arguments are?
So there is a little bit of concern for the ozone layer with methane gas.
Okay.
Okay. I don't personally believe that, but there are people that absolutely believe that. There also is kind of the... How dare we raise animals for food source? Animals are people too. Animals have feelings too.
So I get that. And
so
like
I think those are the two main movements.
A bunch of vegan people, you know, they wear shirts and socks and underwear that say, you know.
Have you seen all this?
Yeah, like on stores and stuff and sites. Like animals are friends, not food. I've seen that. But I don't understand, other than the methane gas, like why...
Whether it's more environmentally friendly to not. Yeah, I don't know. But evidently this is a trend. And maybe it's going to be kind of like the Impossible Burger.
So they claim that it has something to do with the emissions of carbon dioxide. Other than methane gas. And that's what I've heard. I don't know why. Is it the transportation of it? Is it the transportation of the livestock? Like what? I guess I should educate myself and try to figure it out.
Yeah.
Maybe I will not be a meat eater once I do all that investigating. But I've never really understood it, but I also have never really given it any...
I don't know. Looking at the chemistry of what affects the ozone layer, I mean, we're talking carbon and oxygen molecules in different combinations now. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know which is worse. I do know the automobile industry is moving towards this whole auto shutoff. When you're at a stoplight or a stop sign, your vehicle shuts off. The minute you go to put the gas back on, it comes back on.
Right.
And the whole purpose there is to reduce these emissions, and your one particular individual vehicle is not that big a deal, but
everyone's
billions on the planet Earth is a big deal. So,
but relating that back to me, I think I will look it up and see what quote unquote they are saying and why it's bad for the environment, to raise livestock and to have meat production. Because I think that would lend a lot of information, I guess, to my opinion.
Okay. Well, the last story I wanted to talk about was the election in that Kentucky town. What was the name of the town? Do you remember?
Rabbit Hash. And so Rabbit Hash has 500 people who live there, right? Like, did you read that in the story you're talking about?
Well, I guess what caught my eye is Wilbur, the French bulldog, won the mayoral election in Rabbit Hash.
So he may be actually the youngest mayor ever elected at 6 months of age.
And he got 13,000 votes out of an overall casting of votes of nearly 23,000. And so when I started reading the story, I'm like,
how bad if they say that there's only 500 people that live there?
I'm like, this is so bizarre. Why did this place elect a dog mayor? And so I'm reading it, and I'm like really interested, right? And and it's going on to say, Wilbur says thanks for your vote of confidence, and he's, we're deeply excited. And I keep reading, and then finally in the end, I see and I read about all the runners up and how many votes they got. And at the end of the article,
so who and what were the runners up?
Jackrabbit, the Beagle, and Poppy the Golden Retriever came in
so
second
not
and
humans.
Third.
All right.
And so they are now officially ambassadors of Rabbit Hash, along with Ambassador Lady Stone, who will retain her position. So at the very end of the article, I'm still just like, what in the world is going on in this podunk place?
Yeah.
And I do see that the Rabbit Hash Historical Society every year holds this election, and people actually pay to vote. And so this historical society uses this as a fundraiser.
Yes.
To help keep things moving forward. So I thought that was pretty brilliant.
So what's funny is, as we've talked about, right, with things in the news, so when you read, so this is actually trending on NBC, but when you read it, it's like, I guess people instantly will gravitate towards, like, there were no good candidates, so they elected a six-month-old dog.
Yeah, or nobody ran. Or,
yeah, you know. So that's like the assumptions that are made until you truly read the story. But to your point, the Rabbit Hash, Kentucky, has never had a human mayor. In fact, there have been at least 5 dog mayors over the years, and they started this in the late 1990s.
Huh.
From what I read, but I think it's very cool. I think it's super interesting. I do think Wilbur, if I read that correctly, he is an AKC, like purebred French bulldog. So, but they have used this for fundraising, historically and adopting out unwanted pets. So
very cool.
I think it's neat. Definitely newsworthy.
Very, very cool. Before we sign off, is there anything that you recall from the last week or so, case-wise, or word of the week, or we're going to skip that? What do you think? I have a word.
Okay, great, because I can't think of anything.
Dr. Reese and I discussed, I think, a little over 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
A few weeks ago, with a little pet named Jagger, I became a bronchoscopist. Do you know what that is? Yes, you do.
A pist means like a person
Bronchoscopist.
Practices therapies or whatever, right? Like a therapist, whatever. And bronchioles has something to do with the lung, so I don't know. You tell me.
Well, long story short, we did bronchoscopy. We did some scoping of this little dog's upper and lower airways.
Okay.
And it was super cool. We figured out that his left main stem bronchi was being compressed because the left atrium of the heart was enlarged and putting pressure on it. And so we could kind of see in real time as the heart would beat and expand and contract, it was putting pressure and causing collapse of that main stem bronchus, and that was causing the cough on little Jagger.
So in order to do this, you basically passed a flexible endoscope down through a trachea tube?
We actually used a rigid.
You used a rigid scope.
Yeah, and we got, I think, a better picture.
That's crazy. So did you pass it down? So the pet was anesthetized, obviously, mm-hmm. and then you passed it down through the endotracheal tube. Okay.
Yep.
And then, obviously, you passed the tip of the endotracheal tube, and you were able to see...
Yep.
The airways.
All the way down over the heart base. And then had we wanted to go into the lower airways, we could have gotten our little cystoscope, which is, 9.5 millimeters.
Okay.
We could have gone down into the secondary and tertiary airways. But it was kind of obvious when we saw this. And then there was no other mucus or exudates or fluids or anything else.
And so you weren't able
to
see an enlarged aorta on x-rays. That would be
left atrium.
So you weren't able to see that
we were
on x-ray and see that that was the compression.
Yeah, but it's dynamic, right? So you take an x-ray, you're catching at one point in time. We actually did a CT scan with one on inspiration, one on expiration. We kind of showed that one bronchus was collapsing on expiration.
So what is little Jagger's prognosis and outcome of his
treat his heart disease. Don't worry about his cough. It's going to not go away. Focus on his heart disease. And we've kind of done all we can do.
Okay. Well,
so it was cool.
At least you obviously were able to give the owners some sort of reason or understanding.
Yeah.
And for a lot of owners, that's really all they want, right? They want to know why.
Yes.
Whether it's fixable or not, it's just like, tell me why this is happening.
That's exactly. And his owner is awesome. She, very much his advocate in every way. And this is maybe the third or fourth time I've seen him and kind of worked up this problem. And she just wanted to know and wanted to make sure she was doing everything she could for him and see what we could do to help make him feel better. So very cool.
That's good. And such a heartwarming ending to our podcast. All right. Well, I'm going to sign us out, guys.
Okay.
Check in next week as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. Please hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys. I'll be sure and have Rhonda post maybe a little video clip of that scoping on Instagram.
That'd be cool.
All right. Cool. Bye.